Last orders at the bar, please.
Welcome to Tavern Tales, a curated 5e Dungeons & Dragons adventure set in the Tales of the Yawning Portal campaign module by Wizards of the Coast. Previously on Tavern Tales, the Silver and Stapes Circus arrived into the town of Oakhurst, and while out passing out flyers and getting supplies, the Ringmaster's five children, the Silverkins, discovered adventure not far out of town. Twig blights, goblins, and a mystery in a newly exposed sunken cathedral, the Sunless Citadel, drew them together and inspired them to set out and make a name for themselves. They bested goblins, kobolds, traps galore, and an undying troll. They made promises to kobold queens and rescued and then destroyed a baby white dragon. They lost two of their siblings along the way and killed the hobgoblin leader of the Durbaluk tribe after sitting with him to tea. They killed baby fire snakes and helped a bugbear and his wife move on to greener pastures and towards the prospects of a child. And now, with the thick smoke roiling up into the cavern roof above them, they move towards the evil druid Balak. As one, these remaining three Silverkins, with Irky Timbers, the gnome besotted in love for Yashiria, now attempt to solve the mystery at the heart of the Sunless Citadel.
Come sit down and drink with the enemy, raise a glass and toast to the enemy, and I'm not gonna do this on my own. So come sit down and laugh with the enemy, raise a glass and sing to the enemy, and I'm not gonna do this on my own. So
welcome to game 14. Yeah, that's right. Game 14.
Wasn't it
12
last time?
No.
Nope.
Game 14th, December 12th, the last game of 2017, the last game of the Sunless Citadel. No matter what, all the cards are going to be left on the table tonight. We're going to go as hard and fast as we possibly can. So without further ado, let's introduce the people at the table.
Well, first off, I didn't bring any cards, so I don't know what I'm going to leave on the table.
Your shirt.
I'll allow it.
We've had this conversation, Paige.
So this is Paige playing Oriana, who is a sorcerer, tiefling. And one thing that you don't know about Oriana is that she is actually a vegetarian.
What?
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You better get that on your sheet so you don't forget.
As one of your flaws.
I mean, the amount of times that you can't see how disgusted she is when her brothers talk about these different meats and raw meat and tearing them apart. I puked in one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I firmly agree. Yashiri is always putting meat in her mouth, and it definitely turns Oriana off.
It's the main reason.
It's small meat, though.
Yeah. Thin.
Wafer thin.
Wafer thin meat.
It's Kobe beef.
Yeah, there's medium sized.
Yeah.
There's large. Yashiri seems to go for the small meat.
Micro, even.
Yeah.
And you know. Enter Irky Timbers.
Yeah, no, what I was going to say was Little Timbers.
Again, enter Irky Timbers.
You feel it?
It's sad.
You should go next.
I think Irky Timbers is always wanting to play Settlers of Catan with Yashiria because he always wants to tell her he's got wood for her. I've got wood if you want it. Would you like a splinter to pick your teeth?
I don't want to play anymore.
You done? You're falling asleep. Who are you?
I'm not talking to you people anymore. No, I'm Aaron, and I'm playing Yashiria. And for the final game of Sunless Citadel, I have a surprise for everyone.
Cool.
But you all have to wait to see when it happens.
Oh my god, he's going to speak.
You mean she.
She.
She. Yeah, she. The announcement is actually that Aaron so enjoyed playing a woman, he's decided to become a woman himself.
I finally get to be a lesbian. Oh, sorry.
And that concludes our pick on Aaron.
And that was episode 14. Thanks for tuning in, folks.
All right. Happy holidays.
I'm Marie Claire. I play Drayden Silverkin the Fox, who's a half-elf fighter. And the thing that even my siblings don't really know about me is that I actually have a tattoo of my childhood sweetheart name on a place on my body.
Your right buttock.
I was actually thinking just below my hip bone.
Ooh,
I know, right?
Yeah. Super
way
feminine
sexier.
Location.
Way sexier. Just across the hip bone.
Totally. I'd be down with that.
Did you say under, totally or chodily?
Just like does under the eight pack.
No, I guess it doesn't.
The like hip bone.
Right on like that line.
Yeah.
The line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean.
I used to have that V. I don't have that
V. Aaron, have you ever had that V?
I want to say no. It is possible before I discovered food.
And beer.
And beer.
No, it takes a lot of exercise to have that V.
Yeah, I don't do that part.
But nonetheless, I'm Kyle. Let's begin the game. There they stood, on the brink of a veritable underdark forest, our stalwart Silverkins, smaller in number than they were when they entered, hopeful to save at least one member of the Hukriel family, and to bring an end to Belak's evil machinations. Looking out at the brambles and thickets before them, no visible path in sight, Orianna sighed audibly and said,
I don't like where this is going.
And now, let us peek into the adventure itself as the group has rested briefly and begin to lay plans for their path ahead.
So we're in the forest and we know Belak is somewhere here. Do we have any buffs that maybe we could have on ourselves as we explore this area?
I got Shield of Faith, but it only lasts 10 minutes.
Would you like me to read the description once again?
Sure.
Yeah.
Twigs and roots are piled on the floor of this sagging chamber. This is the location that you took your short rest in. The collapsed southern wall opens into a vast cavern. Luminescent fungus on the rough walls and the high roof loom over a twilight grove of sickly briars, bushes, samplings, and other woody plants. Ruined walls and hollow towers protrude from the briars. As you near these briars, pale, spindly colored though they are, they press close about you, casting twisted shadows on the earth floor in the violet light. They grow denser and denser. There is not a passage through them. In order to make your way through, unless you're Urky Timbers, as medium-sized creatures, you will either need to move extremely slowly, picking your way and moving the brambles as you go, or you can go at a quickened pace. However, every 10 feet, you'll need to make a constitution check. Otherwise, you'll take damage as the briars grab and prick at exposed skin.
Use my scythe to assist us in getting through the briars?
Yes. You can also just move extremely slowly. Using your scythe will just allow you to move slowly through the briars.
So there's no difference between...
No difference yet. Really isn't going to aid or abet your progress.
I feel like I could slice them down. But sure. Okay.
I feel like we should probably move slowly.
Move slowly.
Can't risk that damage.
How big do we feel like this area is?
Yeah, I feel like it was actually quite big because I remember it came down like this.
But we get the feeling that that's actually that big.
The briars extend for an extremely long path, an entire football field length for you to try to make your way through.
Okay, so it's probably going to take quite a while to get through.
And given that you're not extremely stealthy, it should take you some time as well. And you will be heard wherever you're going.
Okay. We don't have silence or anything like that.
I could flaming spear ahead of us.
That is an option.
Just roll this death ball.
Go at it. I was thinking about breathing fire, but flaming sphere of death that lasts a minute is awesome as well.
Absolutely.
So what do I have to roll for that?
You're not going to roll anything at all. You're going to cast the spell. You can use the slot, and that will allow you to roll that ball through these briars, these dry, yet still alive, pale, almost under, like from Stranger Things, the upside down style. Haven't seen it.
Vines.
But listeners may very well have. They can get that vine sort of quality. You cast the spell. What do you say to cast Flaming Sphere?
Flames go forth.
Urky Timber says, you'd think I'd be able to do something like that. I mean,
flames go forth and nothing happens for me. But yet, for Yashir, it does.
Isn't she amazing?
Damn straight.
Yes. Yes, she is. He sniffles. The large ball. It is a roiling ball of liquid hot magma, unless you'd like to describe it as otherwise.
No, that sounds good.
Spills forth from your hands, forms into this large beach ball-sized incarceration of living magma. Incarceration? Incarnation of living magma. And it rolls out, burning the briars in front of it. It allows you to proceed due south very easily, following in the 5-foot path that is created by the briars from the flaming sphere. This is just concentration for a minute, is that right?
Yes.
And it can move 20 feet. How far can it move in a given turn?
I think it's got a 60-foot range on it.
Well, that's when you first cast it. Then after that, you can move it with your bonus action a certain amount of space. While you look that up, you proceed south, and a few moving twigs initially try to attack the ball of flame, these little twig blights that you've grown accustomed to fighting and whatnot. One of them attempts to slash at the roiling magma, and it catches their arm as they don't have weapons, and it goes up in immolation immediately. It runs off, setting more briars alight. The smoke begins to overwhelm the area as the roof, while it is expansive, cannot hope to contain enough smoke to control all of this. As you slowly but methodically set fire to everything around you.
One way to piss off a druid.
It's a 30 feet as a bonus action.
Excellent. So yes, you move 300 feet very easily in that minute. And that is more than enough space you need to get in order to make your way towards the Gultheus tree in the distance. This large, gnarled, almost looks like as if a vampire was a tree. That would be what this is.
Like spooky ass tree.
Absolutely.
And it didn't get set on fire?
No, it is not. It is way off in the distance, oh, right? Good. So the briars begin to thin out as you approach. There are these walls that have been erected or were there before. They're just little half things. You could about 4 feet tall. So tall enough for Irky Timbers, but for everybody else, you can easily see over them. They provide you with half cover if you were to crouch down behind them. They would provide you with full cover. The briars essentially stop at these half walls as you slowly make your way further south in this cavern. A walled clearing here is among the briars, and the ceilings stretch about 80 feet above you. Several varieties of plants grow around the perimeter of the clearing, including a few suspicious-looking saplings, twig blights like you've seen before, but their importance pales before that which stands at the courtyard's center. Beneath the fungal light grows an evil tree. Can't describe it more than that. It is evil and a tree, although I'll try. Its blackened, twisted limbs reach upward like a skeletal hand clawing its way out of the earth. Before it stands a few more twig blights, a heavily armored young human male with a shield and sword, a blonde young human woman in a robe fit for a noble, and a middle-aged, bearded human male wearing a hooded brown robe and armed with a staff and a sickle. The younger humans, as you walk up, turn to face you. They have black eyes and gray skin that is the texture of bark.
Oh, that's not creepy at all. I always said children were the worst.
So since no stealth checks were attempted, I assume you're just going to storm right up. Flaming sphere ends. You have killed several twig blights.
Nice.
And smoke roils through the cavern itself. Before you get there, just give me a quick constitution check. I'm looking for a DC 10, just to ensure that you didn't inhale any of the smoke from these burning briars.
17.
You're a fighter. Don't you get constitution as a circled one?
More than that, then, yes.
Okay, good. I see how wonderful everyone is at their gaming today.
Did you say constitution?
Yes, I said constitution.
13.
That is sufficient as well. All of you have passed with flying colors. You do not choke on the smoke caused by the roiling ball of magma and the burning of the brambles. As you walk up, Belak beckons to you. And he says quite loudly.
I'm so excited.
Hold a moment. You know not what you do.
What?
listen, bruh, come on over here. Let's talk about this before you get all burning and cutting.
Like, you want to smoke a doobie?
Dave's not here, man.
What?
Drayden straightens up and stands to his full height and approaches cautiously.
Sure. You move around the walls.
Sure.
Stepping into the light.
Whisper to Erky as I pass and say, Erky, stay back here and tell the tale should we die here today.
Right. Well, that doesn't... You're not really feeling me with confidence here.
It's a 3-versus-3 battle, I assume. It's fine. And I cough and say, it was nice knowing you. And I pat him on his shoulder and I walk up.
His jaw hangs limply as he stares at... And then he looks at Yashiria like,
let's just leave.
I can't abandon my family.
Well, I'm not about to just hang out back here behind a wall.
But you can hide behind it. It's taller than you.
You can crouch down with me. There's no need.
It doesn't cover all of me. My breastplate hangs over the side.
You just sit upon the earth and you would...
I'm far too tall.
He knows you're here already, and it's nonetheless. So... I see that Drayden is leaving and going to truck with this crazed druid. You do not wish my help?
You've never helped us before. What means you're going to do it now?
I see. Well.
Isn't your spot in the shadows usually?
That's a very unfair thing to say, tiefling. But I accept your chastisement and will work to make amends. If you will but let me.
If you're going to get my sister's hand.
In what?
In marriage, because that's where I see this going.
Whoa.
No. How are you? No. Just relax.
I mean, we only just met
Just relax.
If like a weekend.
If that's where this is going, I need to know that you'll protect her. And from our previous battles, I have not seen that. And therefore, I cannot support this relationship.
Relationship?
I've seen you two getting all cozy. I may ignore it, but I know what's happening.
All right, well, I...
Now that's out in the open.
And you just leave?
Yep.
Okay, and you just storm off as well, leaving Yashiria and Erky Timbers.
With a flick of my hair.
Erky Timbers says, I thought I could be of use.
Erky, listen to me. I need you to stay back here. I can't have you dying on me. But listen.
But I'll just die near you.
Listen to me. I want you to know that I love you. And if we survive this, I want you to marry me.
I called it.
And then you leave as well?
And then I leave as well.
Okay.
Nailed it.
Erky, you might not have...
I'm so proud of you, Aaron.
Was that our surprise?
You kind of jumped the gun on it. I was like, damn it.
I'm a mind reader. Don't take that to heart.
Okay. You thought Erky Timber's mouth was agape when Drayden left. You're pretty sure it unhinged when Oriana gave him a stripping up one side and down the other. But when Yashiria proposes marriage and then stalks off... I think he faints. I think he collapses to his knees at the bare minimum. But you know he is now protected by the wall. The twig blights behind you are all burned and dead. And there's nothing but a swollen and infected Cleekson way back who's bound and gagged. And he's not anyone's threat no matter what happens to him. You're just hoping maybe to fix him on the way back. So you all approach Belak in single file.
Before we go on...
Mm-hmm.
What is your AC?
15.
16.
I'm going to cast Shield of Faith on Oriana. So you get 2 AC for 10 minutes.
Did you get something else too? Or is that it?
Nope. One creature gains 2 AC for the spell's duration, which is 10 minutes.
And that is a concentration spell.
That is concentration.
So you can't do anything else?
Yashiria can still do a lot of other non-concentration spells, but she does need to keep her concentration on that. So if you take damage, you will need to roll checks against your constitution. Against your concentration in order to maintain that spell for the next duration.
I would like to indicate something to my siblings as I see that they are approaching.
Sure.
In the circus, when we're about to swindle a rube, it's not like you all come face to face with the person. There's like a hand signal to be like, we're going to get this guy and spread out, you know?
Sure. So what is the hand signal for the attack?
The circus Silverkin and Stapes circus. We're going to go and hustle this guy for all he's got is like a brush of my hair behind my pointed ear and two snaps in the
okay.
hair. And that means like spread out and don't go single file, guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, nonetheless, single file is how you approach. You break off as you get closer to Bellac. He stands behind who you can only guess is Sir Brawford and Sharwin Hukriel.
I didn't realize she was a girl.
Yeah, me either.
As you approach, Bellac signals to Drayden and says, "Hey, man, I just want to talk, that's all right with you."
That's fine. I like conversation of all kinds. Don't you?
Totally, man. Totally.
This is an interesting place. And I start to look around kind of nonchalantly. Your interior decorator is very much naturalistic. There's a lot of green and brown tones.
It's yeah, that's all me, man. I'm making it grow under the ground. You know how hard that is?
It's very hard without the sun, I presume.
Anyway, I'm Bellac. You may have heard me called the Outcast before. This is a dirty name. My circle calls me after they expelled me. Damn fools. And why? Why did they do that? Because I dared, man. I dared to expand nature's reach in ways they couldn't grasp. I have found what I sought all those years in the Gulthius tree.
Oh, this...
Isn't it righteous?
This tree, and I point to the tree over his behind
him. It's beautiful, isn't it? It lives, even though it looks dead. At an age long past, someone staked a vampire on this very spot. And the stake, man, it took root. And so grew the Gulthius tree, reverberating with primal power for those like me who can tap it. 420.
Drayden scratches at his manly beard.
Yes, and, which has grown in as you've descended and had limited opportunity to engage in...
There isn't much manscaping happening down here. And Drayden looks at the Gulthius tree and says, "Is it a bone meal fertilizer?"
Tree grows of its own power, man. I really think it ties the whole room together.
And Drayden just like crosses his arms and like looks at the tree appreciatively. Like it's a large, scary ass looking tree. I feel like he's thinking to himself, "Oh, Dominic would really like this. Wouldn't this be a good attraction, this scary ass tree in the circus?"
Oriana recognizes out of that entire speech that he gave, the only thing that stuck with her was her comment that he taps the tree. And she ponders on that and asks him for further description as to in what way he taps this tree, because he seems awfully close to the earth.
Righteous question, pretty tiefling. It goes like this. Supplicants of the tree, if the Gulthius tree accepts them, will be absorbed into the tree and infused with its power. Because of my righteous and inexorable contact and connection with the natural world around me and the natural way I live, I can commune and communicate with the Gulthius tree. And that, brah, lets me also control its supplicants.
You've been in the tree?
That's a more straightforward version of my question.
Nah, brah. I ain't been with the tree.
I assume that's where the twig blights came from.
That's a good and astute thought. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. The fruit of the tree, the seeds when planted, become the twig blights and allows the Gulthius tree to stretch its reach into locations where it cannot. For it is a standing structure.
So what happens when you eat the fruit?
Well, nothing's wrong with the fruit, brah. It's perfectly fine. Like, you could just scarf that down, and the red fruit is gonna heal you right up, treat you good. The white fruit, though, yeah, man, that's bad stuff. It's gonna poison you and ultimately lead to your demise. But, you know, red or white, it's both fruit, both have the same seeds. And that's what's important. So I've been sending the goblins up, because they're little conniving snits, to, you know, disseminate the seeds. They sell the fruit. I don't care. Whatever happens, with as long as the seeds are planted and they grow and they become the Goltheus tree's minions in the natural world, we'll be able to create a colony of the Goltheus' spawn on the surface of the world.
I take a quick glance at Yashiria to be like, don't believe a fucking word I say. That kind of face. And I'll go, wow, you know, I never really thought about how beautiful the circle of life is. Huh. In an effort to, like, flatter him, ingratiate with him.
Far out, brother. Far out.
Why don't you make a deception check?
Ooh, 20.
Wow. He's like, you get it, man. Everybody else that comes down here just wants to cut the tree down. It's a part of the natural order. It needs to have a place. And this is what I'm trying to do here. I thought for sure that with that roiling ball of flame that you were walking my way, that we weren't going to be able to see eye to eye. But now, yeah, the three of you, you'll be real good helpers.
Now, I'd just like to ask the humans by your side, what happened to them?
They became supplicants to the tree, and they were embraced by his gorgeous and most wooden core.
How?
They laid down before the tree, and the tree absorbs them into himself. When they are expunged a day later, they have acquired the tree's essence and desire.
So, I hear the passion. I get my arms into it. So I'm emoting with my whole body to be like, I hear your passion. I would like to politely decline becoming a supplicant.
What? Then why are you here?
Oh, just, you know, checking stuff out.
Curiosity.
Seeing the sights, as it were.
But you're all powerful adventurers, and you would do well in service of the tree.
I didn't catch her eye glimpse that she sent to Yashiria, right. So I have no idea that she's actually being sarcastic.
You mean he?
Damn it. I have no idea that he is being sarcastic.
Okay.
And I've been trying to stay calm as much as I typically can. And I mean, he flattered me. I don't get that very often, right?
Yep.
But I can't stand it anymore. And I'm like, okay, listen up. You're a lunatic. You're having influence over my siblings, and that's not going to go over. This needs to end.
What are you talking about?
You're crazy.
No, just see the world in a different way. If you could just adjust your worldview, man. There's just things that you need to understand. You don't know everything about the world.
Have you ever been out in the world?
Of course I have. That's why the circle expelled me, yo.
Underground.
Yeah, no, I didn't start out here. Like, when I found the Goltheus tree, that's when I knew my purpose in life. All you have to do is just kneel before the tree and you'll realize your purpose too.
I do not kneel for anybody.
All right, then. I can dig it.
Is it supposed to be doing that with the green slime?
Okay, now you're definitely attempting a deception check. Yeah. While Drayden attempts this deception check and eats unnecessary pretzels, you both give me a perception check. Do your deception, Drayden, while they roll perception.
I'm attempting to get, like, surprise on him if I distract him, right? Like, to pull Calcrix and slice him down. Can I roll for advantage?
All right, what is your deception check, Drayden?
Well, I wanted to know if I'm successful at this, can I get a surprise attack on him?
Surprise would give you advantage. Is that, that's what you're looking for? Well, advantage, right?
Yeah.
Because I see you with a blue mote. Why don't you hold off on the blue mote on the deception check? And if you fail the deception check, just use the blue mote for the attack itself and then have advantage on that.
Okay, but I mean, it'll be initiative.
Right.
Okay.
It'll be initiative either way.
Oh. So there's no way I can get surprised. Okay.
But what you're looking for is advantage over Balak.
No, I was looking to get a surprise round.
You're not going to... No, there's no way you can get a surprise round.
Okay. I'll try. Oh, no. Look at that! It's so weird!
But it does...
She breaks into laughter.
That actual horrible check, because... You don't know what Drayden is pointing at, and you don't know why Drayden is pointing, gives you both advantage on your perception check as you both look around trying to figure out what is he talking about. So What is your perception checks, Ishiria?
14.
17.
There is a giant frog in the tree, poised to leap down onto Ishiria. You have noticed this, Orianna. As Drayden wildly waves around, you look around for whatever it is, and this black and green large frog, it is the size, it is bigger than Irky Timbers, hanging from a branch of the tree. It looks like it is waiting for a signal to leap down upon Ishiria. Meanwhile, both of you, in fact, all three of you, have noticed that Sir Brawford and Sharwin are both in position to attack and protect Balak.
Noticing this frog, can I throw a spell at it and start the initiative?
Is there anything else that you guys wanted to talk or say before combat begins?
Well, I feel like I don't want to yell anything about the frog because I don't want the frog to know that I see it and I want to catch it off guard.
But is there anything you would like to say as a party to Balak? Any last nagging questions before you rain holy fire and death upon this scene in front of you?
I feel like there's something we're forgetting.
I'm not trying to propose that you've forgotten something.
He just wants color, I think.
I just wanted to know, make sure.
Yeah, I think me calling him crazy was good. Calling him a lunatic.
Yeah, he's a crazy fuck.
So Orianna's the only one who notices the frog.
Absolutely.
But all three of us notice that they're sort of like...
Oh, combat is
getting combat
imminent.
Ready.
Okay. Combat is imminent. He's told you that you need to be supplicants of the tree. He's told you that you need to be brought before the tree, and it'll show and adjust your worldview to accepting the tree as a dominant life form. That seems to be his intent.
I just call for Vape and Glassy to come by my side.
They are already there.
Perfect.
Did you want Vape or Glassy to say anything before combat begins?
No. I feel like between Vape and Balak, they would get off on a great conversation.
Oh yeah, totally.
Because they're the same.
I guess I will draw my Warhammer and shield.
I believe you already had those things drawn and out. You would not have approached them. They already had their weapons out. Oh, yeah. It was definitely not a welcome to the housewarming party sort of opportunity here. Unless your housewarming gift was the shield and the Warhammer, but that wouldn't be a very nice housewarming gift. So, Drayden attempts to distract Balak. Fails utterly.
Oh, yeah.
In his attempted swaying. And Balak says, "Well, man, as the surfer in me says..." "You don't go to the wave. The wave comes to you, man." And he signals. No doubt at the same time as Drayden signals with the hair behind his pointed ear and the double snap. Balak's symbol is much, much broader and simpler. He just throws his two arms open and waves his hand twice.
Go get him, kids.
We initiate combat.
So, initiative?
Initiative, please.
Let's dance.
What is Orianna's initiative?
18.
15.
11.
And the methods?
11.
So distracted by my own terrible distraction.
Orianna, you may go first.
I'm going to shoot Ray of Frost at the frog.
Okay, yes. You will not kill the frog with that blast, if that was your intent.
I mostly wanted to knock it out of the tree and hurt it. Or do I have a possibility of killing it?
Some of your other higher level spells might actually be able to kill the frog in one go.
Chromatic orb, maybe.
I'll use chromatic orb.
But you'd really need to, like...
throw it hard.
Pump it.
Pump it. Yeah. Pump it. Turn up the radio. That one? No?
Okay. Yeah.
Because the only other one I have is shatter.
Oh, shatter the fucking tree.
I was going to say shatter the branch or something.
Shatter that tree.
Do some lousy shit on the tree.
That seems really good. Shatter the tree. I don't know why, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. You can cast shatter in such a way that it targets the frog and the tree.
Yeah, it's a 10-foot radius sphere.
Will it do anything to the tree?
You can take a look at the spell in the description here.
Well, I know that this spell has like a sphere radius, but I didn't know. I guess our goal is to get rid of the tree. Okay. Yeah, I'll use sphere.
You mean shatter.
Shatter. I'll use shatter.
I use sphere.
a sphere attack. Shatter.
Can you just give a quick, do you have shatter open? Is that what you're looking at?
A 10-foot sphere centered on a point must make a constitution saving throw. The creature takes 3d8 damage on a failed save, half as much on a successful one.
The tree and the frog will have to make constitution checks in order to take less damage from your shatter.
She can roll the d8s, right?
But you can still roll the 3d8 damage, okay. Yes. What is the save difficulty here for the tree and for the frog?
14.
How much damage did you do?
11.
The frog creels in agony, holds hard the branch that it was hanging from. The tree, though, shakes. Twigs, smaller branches fly off of it, and a large crack runs up the trunk of the tree as this booming shatter, which, what is the command word that you release shatter?
Chatillerse.
Cool. Write that down so you don't remember that.
I did last time.
Excellent. Good job. The tree is shattered. It's not gone, but maybe a third of its hit points or so, as the branch, one of these principal stout branches that may have very well been one of the first branches the tree grew, holding the frog, cracks and breaks. And while the frog does manage to hold on to the limb, the whole limb comes crashing down in amongst you. None of you are injured by the falling debris and frog, but the frog is. So please roll an additional 2d6 of damage for the frog's falling damage. 1d6 for the fall, one more d6 because he's underneath the limb.
7.
You have succeeded in killing the frog.
Woo woo.
Nice.
In one go.
GG.
I didn't like that frog, the way he was eyeing you up, Yashiria.
He totally wanted to lick you.
He wanted to lick you where it mattered.
Moo.
Whoa. Whoa.
Irky Timber is some competition.
Tongue-sized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ribbit.
Ribbit.
It is not yet Belak's turn, but when the frog is squished underneath the branch and its limbs are splayed out, the ichor of its blood suffusing the earthy compost that is under your feet, Belak cries out, Colkit! No!
You killed his pet.
It is now Yashiria's turn. Yashiria, Sharwin is closest to you.
How far?
Oh, not very far. Maybe 10, 12 feet.
I'm going to go up to her and use Inflict Wounds.
Okay.
I shall roll to attack.
Yeah, there's no way to save them from this curse disease.
You don't know. You haven't checked. You haven't looked into it at all to see if this is something that could be saved from.
Let me backtrack a bit. Instead of doing an attack, could I do an Arcana check to see if we might be able to save them? See if there's any...
No, you cannot do an Arcana check on this. This would be a nature check.
Can I do a nature check?
Of course.
I guess I should have just put them to sleep and we could have dealt with them later.
15?
You're unsure. You believe that there might be an opportunity to save them, but are you saving them only for them to die? You're not sure. You know that the hold over them is by the tree itself, and that Belak is controlling the tree, which allows him to control them. If you kill the tree, you will free them from its bondage.
But they might not necessarily survive.
Exactly.
Okay.
But then you're getting three birds with one stone.
I guess so. Three birds. Three birds stoned at once. So I guess that's my turn then, yeah? Because I did my check.
No, I'll allow that check to have been previous to this. You can definitely take action.
How far is the tree from me? Because I didn't charge up. I did the check first.
The tree is about 40 feet away from you.
Dang.
Yeah, maybe closer. I'll gladly allow it to be closer if I'm not remembering the story exactly right.
You have two story loads.
I think that's also what he's hinting at.
Yeah, we might need them though.
I'll just cast Sacred Flame, one of my cantrips, on the tree.
Okay. That is a dexterity saving throw?
Yes, it is.
All right. It's rolling with disadvantage. What is the difficulty?
DC 14.
It has a 13 with disadvantage, so...
Yes.
You've succeeded, but just barely.
Yes.
Roll your damage.
It takes 8 damage.
That's radiant damage, or is that it's fire damage?
Radiant. That is radiant damage.
Okay, it takes 8 damage. Yashiria, that was your turn. What did you say to call sacred fire down from the heavens? Or up from the floor, I mean, really.
From the earth and from the sky, fire be upon thee. Bzzzt.
Bzzzt. And you say bzzzt as well? All right. With that, it is Sir Brawlford's turn. He is carrying a wicked-looking sword in his hands.
Is it cooler than Calcrix? Is Calcrix jealous?
He swings his sword at Drayden, for he is closest to Drayden.
Of course he does.
His black, dead eyes show no sign of intelligence or emotional interest. He swings, not at you, but at Calcrix. The sword hits the other sword, edge to flat, and a horrendous sound and crack occurs, and the iceborne blade of Calcrix shatters.
Can I parry with my body? As a battle master, I have the ability to parry a blow that would have normally damaged something. And expend one of my superiority die to reduce the damage.
Yes, you may definitely do that. Okay. You will parry the blow. You will take 4 points of damage yourself. However, Calcrix, the ice brand, for the blade itself is made of ice, cracks visibly, and tendrils and veins of cracking and damage run the length. And you know that without time for the sword to heal, you cannot use it without fear of potentially shattering it. And Calcrix says, "Let's kill him!" That was Sir Brawlford's turn. It is now Drayden's turn.
I'm gonna whip out my warhammer and...
What? No!
Put Calcrix to sleep and be like, goodbye, sweetie.
I will! Okay.
Nap time. Use my warhammer to smack the druid as hard as I possibly can.
Okay, so you're going to go after the druid?
Yes.
Okay, in order to do that, you will have to leave Sir Brawford's threat range.
Okay.
Which means he will get an attack of opportunity against you.
That's fine.
All right, you move away. He will attack you. I have smashed down at you with a 21.
All right, I'm going to use my superiority attack again.
Because you're using a bonus action or a reaction? What are you
it's
doing?
It's reaction, yeah.
All right, so your reaction has re-upped, so you may use your reaction.
And I'm going to use my parry maneuver again and parry that action. All right, so how much damage does he do to me?
He did 9 damage to you.
Okay, I don't take any because I successfully parried with a 10.
But you only roll a d8.
Plus 2, plus my dex mod.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So I'm like, I swing around and block it with my warhammer, clinking off into the distance.
All right. And you rush forward to attack the druid. Go for it.
I'm using my warhammer, and I'm going to swing it once around my head, which parried the blow, and try to hit him in his stupid body.
Roll it up. Spending your blue for advantage.
Yep. Oh. Boop, boop. Two-handed, and I got a crit. So that's double damage. So 2d10. Plus 4, that is 18 damage.
Damn.
And I would like to...
Imagine what that damage would have been if you'd used Calcrix.
I know. I don't want to kill her, though. I'm going to use a goading attack. So as I hit him, I'm actually going to goad him, expending a superiority die.
Yeah, you're going to goad him. How so?
I'm going to goad him. So what goading does is that on a failed wisdom check, he can only attack me.
So is it kind of like a taunt?
Yeah, and I get to roll the superiority die on top of the damage because of my witty remark, which now I have to make up. So as I swing my hammer...
Okay, so you're just spending another superiority die.
Yeah.
And it allows you to roll even more damage.
A little bit more damage, yeah.
But it was a critical success and you choose that afterwards?
I have to choose it after I hit.
So shouldn't you roll this twice?
When you hit a creature, you can expend one superiority die to attempt to have the target only to attack you. You add the superiority die to the attack's damage roll, and target must make a wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, the target's on disadvantage on all attack rolls against targets other than you until the end of your turn. So, yes? So, does it double?
I would think it should.
Okay, that's another 10. And what I say to him to goad him into attacking me is I say, I'm going to burn you to the ground, you stupid hippie.
Black.
But he has to make a DC saving throw now.
You say this, glaring at him, both of your fists in his face. You grab the front of his jerkin of his robes. You glare at him. And you shake him once or twice, and flecks of rain hit you in the face as you believe that it's raining outside now in the fervor of your goading attack upon him. And Balak says,
Nah, bro. Not far.
And he dies in your hands. Your warhammer is still embedded in his skull, sticking out the top of it. The rain that is falling down.
This is blood. I get it. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
You stand there, taken aback from the ferocity and efficacy of your attack. It is now the Mephit's turn.
So now that he's dead, the tree is still alive, right? And still has a hold over.
The Mephits go at the same time as Drayden went.
Okay.
So very little time has gone in the course of Drayden's super action.
I direct Vape to use his steam breath on the tree.
Okay, Vape, go for it. What do you say, Vape?
All right, it's getting vapey in here.
Cool. Is it a strike or is it a save?
Each creature in that area must succeed on a DC 10 dexterity saving throw.
All right. It's dexterity saving throw for a tree.
It's a 15-foot cone.
So yeah, I know. The tree has failed its dexterity save.
So then I just roll my damage?
Absolutely.
16.
Anybody feel like steamed gothic tree?
That seems to be the spark. The tree ignites from this blast of steam. Needles, leaves rain down as the tree creaks and groans, and untethered from the mooring of its roots, it topples. Sir Brawlford gasps incoherently. Sharwin, who is looking at Yashiria, blinks two or three times, and the blackness in her eyes clears, and she looks at you, falls to her knees, and says, "Thank you. So thirsty."
I give her some of my water skin.
She collapses to her side and attempts to drink from the water skin. Her lips move, but haltingly. Sir Brawlford continues to make incoherent sounds. You hear his sword fall limply from his grasp. And unless you do something momentous, the two of them will likely die within the hour or within the day.
I could spare the dying on both, could I not, as a cantrip?
They are taking constant damage from the changes that were wrought in them by the tree. And spare the dying would just give them back the life they had before, that life which has been absconded by the tree. Healing would likely damage them. So much of their insides have been altered. The bark skin that you see upon their flesh is their skin. They are quite likely more wooden and tree-like than they are human. So as you pore over your character sheet, as Yashiria rushes about trying to figure out what manner of recourse she can do at this poor level that you are, to save and salvage. You guys are not superstars. You are trying to become heroes, but you're not heroes yet. That remains for another story. The frog is dead. The tree blights fall lifeless to the ground that are nearby, because there were some more nearby.
Didn't think I would kill him that easily.
And as you search the body of Belak, Orianna, and Drayden, while Yashiria is busy, you find that Belak has a key. He also has 3 potions of healing, 2 doses of antitoxin, and a wand of some capacity. You see a glint upon the finger of Sharwin, as embedded in the bark of her skin is the Hukriel signet ring. And Sir Brawford, of course, carries that wicked-looking sword that he used to almost destroy Calcrix.
I'm getting the impression that you think the sword is cooler than my sword.
I don't know why you would get that impression. I made the sword that you are currently using. The book made the other one. I gave you a sheet with a picture.
I know, it's beautiful. I want to keep it.
The sword that Sir Brawford carries is called Shatterspike, and it can be used to shatter objects.
That's cool.
I could use a bag of... No, he's not dead yet.
Sir Brawford is probably dying. Erky Timbers comes forth when he sees the aftermath of all of this. Orianna, it's your decision, but you feel the pull of the Gultheus tree, that it calls out to you and to you alone. Neither of the two of you feel any sort of draw by the tree, but Orianna does. So if you move over to the tree itself, let me know, or you may choose to ignore the call of this dying elemental.
Well, my first question, are we able to determine if the antitoxin would work on curing?
It's not a toxin.
Okay.
So it's a curse of what I have to do. Can I do a medicine check?
Of course, you may make a medicine check. You may want to have advantage on that roll if you're going to be rolling for...
So while Yashiri does that, is determining what she would like to do, I notice that Yashiri is taking interest on finding a way to help these two humans, and my chaotic side does give in, and I do notice the pull of the tree, and I walk towards it.
Okay, your two mephits nestle in close, afraid, shaking, as you approach the tree. A thick, reddish sap oozes into the ground. There is a splinter, but it's not a splinter. It's about 3 feet long, broken off from the core of the tree itself, where root and trunk meet. It is reddish in color, and it sits there alone, apart from the tree itself, having been ruptured in the blasts of fire, steam, and concussive force that had rended the tree from its life. And it calls to you, this splinter that could be fashioned into something dark, but something powerful.
I'm not carpentering that for you.
It's going to need more than I.
We'll see about that.
Here's a blue mote.
Thank you.
I reach out to grab it and pull it up out of the ground.
It's not really in the ground. You touch the splinter, the world goes black. And for the moment, the briefest of moments, you're in your happy place. And you're holding in your hand that staff that I mentioned before. And it is reddish in color and creates devastation and destruction upon the land. As any time you place it down, it kills the plant life around it, sucking up the natural energies and essence of it. You prick your finger on the splinter. Blood seems to be drawn into it itself, but it's warm to your touch, and it feels like home. Yashiria, what was your medicine check like? Did you spend a blue for it?
No, I didn't.
Are you going to?
No, I won't.
All right. You don't care enough.
You should have.
I probably should have.
Yeah.
I'm dead.
Yeah, no. You have no literal idea as to what to do. Maybe did some sort of healing kit with an antitoxin and a healing spell and a healing potion and maybe a prayer and plea to Paelor. Something might come of all of that. But your plea to Paelor would need to involve some sort of invocation on your part or an oath of service. And that, all of that, may do the trick. But only may. And even then, with the 10 you got in your medicine check, combined with all of your other knowledge, you think you're throwing a Hail Mary. Like a 2% chance.
Would you like the antitoxins and the potions of healing?
Yeah, I'll give those a shot. All right.
You just drink them?
No, I just... Ooh, delicious. Yeah, I'll take one of the antitoxins first. All right. And I will slowly pour it into Sharwin's...
What I was suggesting is that you're going to need to combine the antitoxins. You're going to need to combine the potions of healing. You're going to need to utilize whatever healing spells that you have left to cast. You're going to need to also make some sort of pledge to Paylor in order for this all to work. And even then, I'm still going to require a roll. And you're going to need to knock it out of the park.
And this is only for one.
I'm not that big of a jerk.
You have to do all of this twice.
You do all of that twice. You don't even have the antitoxins or the healing potions. So do all of this, and I will allow you to, in some sort of stone-shaped bowl or whatnot, create a tincture that is blessed by Paylor that you believe may do the trick.
Okay. Instead of healing potions, can I substitute my actual healing, or does it need to have... healing potions as well as my healing all together.
You got to use everything.
You got to use everything.
Got to use it all up.
Okay. You have to do that.
All right.
All right. So the bowl will be my shield as it is curved.
Sure. Yeah, that's beautiful color. I will give you I'll give you plus on that already. So it's not as going to be as tough as it was before.
I shouldn't pour them out, should I?
You're going to have to.
Okay. So I will pour out the antitoxin. How many do we have?
Two.
Two?
We have three healing potions.
The five potions, the two antitoxins, three heals.
I think you've got other potions and whatnot on your bodies as well.
Yeah, I use those too. It's all gone. I'll use healing word you said may hurt them.
You're going to need to use your healing spells. So I don't know how many spell slots you have remaining. You're going to need to use all of those spell slots for healing.
I think I have two left. So... Healing word and cure wounds. So do I roll for those or do I just use them?
You're going to cast those spells.
Okay.
As part of your ritual that you are creating.
Okay.
To resuscitate or drive out the unnatural naturalness of their bodies.
I roll the hit or just roll the heal.
So what are you saying for the heals? What is the color for these spells that you cast?
How old are these two again?
They're young. They're adventuring type.
Okay. Paylor, spare these young ones, as they have not seen the mystic and wonder of this world yet. It is far too soon to take their life away.
Great color for your heal spells. You cast, you use your two spell slots to heal. Not bothering to roll those. And then, the more important part, the oath that you will make unto Paylor.
Where is Urky Timbers?
Oh, God.
Urky Timbers is next to you, helping with the casting of this ritual.
I grab his hand.
Yes.
And we look up at the sky. Can we see the sky?
No.
Now that the tree's gone? I thought we could, that the tree's gone now.
But you're not, you're still way underground.
Oh, sorry. I remember the rain wasn't actually rain. It was blood from, okay. So I look up at the roof and I say, Paylor, I come to you in this time of need. I pledge to watch over this man, literally watch over this man as his faithful bride. Please spare these children. Their time has not yet
come.
Okay,
so before, when you start to do all of this and Urky Timbers is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I like you, but you're a human and I am a gnome. I mean... passion is great and all, but an oath of this caliber, I'm not ready for that sort of commitment to Paylor's name. Perhaps there's some sort of alternative oath you might beseech that doesn't necessarily include my name. Paylor, be blessed. Does a symbol.
I am so torn right now.
What are you torn by?
If I do a different oath or spend a white moat.
Well, what would you spend the white moat doing?
Change Urky Timbers' response.
Ah.
To accept and be like, yeah, sure, we're good.
You love him that at much.
At the end of the day, the decision is yours as to whether or not you want to make a new oath. And it might be relatively... immaterial to Pelor, that you're swearing an oath of fealty or an oath of like love and companionship with Erky Timbers in the process of trying to save two other people, that your oath may need to be more overreaching and more grandiose than just one person. I'm being rough. It's hard.
No, I know.
To on the spot come up with an oath of this magnitude. I love what you intended. That is great. I just had to play Erky Timbers to his true nature as well.
I mean, typically when you're thinking about these sorts of oaths, they're like, you know, of service or of I'm going to vanquish evil from the world, or you're going to go start a mission, a monastery somewhere, or like a mission to somewhere in Faerun to like spread Pelor's word, stuff like that.
What are those people that go door to door?
Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yeah, those ones.
So, Drayden, you pick up Shatterspike after you go through Balak's corpse. It doesn't talk to you. It's just a sword. Is magical. Calcrix is pissed that you would deign to even hold such a thing that would hurt her. I thought we were special!
I slightly hold Calcrix and rub her gently and say, but I've got to sell the sword.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Good cover.
The sword means nothing to me, sweetie.
It's not like that, I swear.
I was just using the sword in the other hand.
We're just friends. We just like to stay up late and talk on the
baby,
phone.
You know I dual wield.
God. We can totally have a threesome.
Back to oaths.
Can I sacrifice myself in the name of Pelor to save the two of them?
You want to like die on your shield for them?
Yes.
That might not bring them back.
Then you die for nothing.
Pelor has put an awful lot into you. Mm. Pelor hasn't put anything into these other two people. You're not too sure that Pelor is going to be happy to see you in the afterlife if you're sacrificing yourself for just two essentially commoners. But Sir Brafford himself is also a paladin of Pelor.
And Charwin is not of Pelor.
Charwin's just an adventuresome girl who never even got a turn.
How would Pelor feel about an oath to help teach this girl the ways of himself?
Think about it like, grant me the opportunity to save these two people today that I may influence them and their village to turn the shrine of Pelor into a temple of Pelor. And I will convince Sir Brawford to stay here and teach unto the populace of Oakhurst that which they need to hear of Pelor's light. And then I will ensure when I leave from this place to always tell the tale of Sir Brawford and Charwin Hukriel's salvage by your light and guidance.
Play into the ego. That helps.
Now say exactly what he said.
Yeah, can you just repeat that for me, please? Thanks. I'll spend a blue mode so you have
I'm just going to cut all of that.
Uh-oh.
And leave you with making your own oath.
Ghost riding. It's totally your thing.
Pelor, grant me your power. Spare these two children today so that I may show them a tomorrow with your guiding light inside of it. We will rebuild the shrine into a temple, praising your name. And Sir Brawford will continue to go forth and teach all of your blessings and guidance. Spare these two. Show them tomorrow.
Hallelujah. Oh, sorry.
Can I get an amen?
Can I get a witness?
This little light of mine.
God damn it.
I'm gonna make it shine.
And I will continue to bring light to this troublesome world and vanquish the evils that try and disturb your name.
You're gonna roll a d20. You needed a 20 to start with, so 5% chance. But you use those three potions, so I'm going to give you an additional 10%. So that's 18 or higher now. And then you use the vials of antitoxin, so that's another 5%. So that's a 17 or higher that you need to get. But you used your shield, so I'm going to give you 5 on that, because that was really good color and I felt very inspired by that. So we're going to make that a 12 or higher. Then you had Erky Timbers assist you in some measly fashion. That's 5%. That's 11 or higher. And your oath that started out strong, I'm going to give that an additional 5. So we're now sitting at 6 or higher, and you save the people. You may spend for advantage. Roll it twice.
6 or higher, you say?
6 or higher.
14.
Oh, you rolled a 6. Look at that.
I did roll a 6.
Paylor takes an awful long time in responding. At least a couple of minutes.
He's screening his phone calls again.
And then you start to hear like a rumble, very faint, and a blinding shaft of light cuts through the top of the cavern. It's no more than 2 or 3 inches in diameter, but it cuts through the entirety of the Sunless Citadel from the world above. And you realize it's high noon on the surface. And Paylor's blinding ray of light hits the shield and suffuses the entirety of the cavern in glowing radiance, warming all of you, healing all of you of the wounds of battle. Not that you really took any.
I was just going to say, I don't think anyone took damage.
A question. Does the healing light of Paylor happen to heal Calcrix the sword?
Calcrix is in her sheath on Drayden's back. So we don't know if it did anything or was helpful to Calcrix.
Okay. Sorry.
Good question, though. The bark of the skin of the two unfortunates that you are attempting to save sloughs off of them. Pink, fresh new skin forms. They're both completely naked from this because...
Oh, yeah, I guess. Okay.
That's just the color of, I don't know, whatever happened to Jesus. Anyway.
Resurrection?
Oh, yeah, reanimation.
Reanimation? Well, I mean, it happened.
You know, our kids go to Christian school. I didn't.
The resurrection.
There we go. And you assist them out of the dungeon. You return Cleekson to his mother. He, as well, has been somehow healed by Paylor's glowing light. The shield of your faith cannot be moved. It is soldered to the stone of the Sunless Citadel.
Paylor welded it to the ground.
Oh, cool. Does it reflect the sun at noon?
Yes, and every day at noon, the shield fills the entire cavern with the glowing radiance of Paylor's majesty and light.
Cool. So cool.
The two bugbears have left, moved on to some other dungeon in some other locale in the hopes that leaving this place will help them to finally have kids, given the unnatural state of things there.
I hope we see those two crazy kids again.
The kobolds are sad to learn of the fate of Calcrix, although knowing that Drayden is carrying Calcrix the sword ennobles them. But they are also happy that so many of the goblins have suffered, especially the hobgoblins. And Eustrael is planning on sending a convoy to speak of peace with Grenell and Cleekson. However, several months down the way, when that envoy does eventually make it, Grenell kills all of them with poison and then attempts to take over all of the kobolds anyway, and they end up fighting and killing each other for many years to come. But the dark hold of Ashardalon has been eradicated, and now that there is the light of Paylor within, the Sunless Citadel itself begins to draw attention, and instead of the Shrine of Paylor, it becomes the temple locale many, many years from now. Years that Ysheria is not there for. For along the way back, you return. The Silver and Stapes Circus has packed up and headed on its way. It's been too long since you guys all left. Your father left a note with Carowyn, who is more than happy to see her surviving child and Sir Brawford. She provides you with a place to stay, an inn for the night, and lets you know that your two siblings both returned to the Sunless Citadel in search of you. You go back to the Sunless Citadel, and something calls out, says that passage to the north in that bugbear's chamber, the one to which Sidork had the map, is possibly where Torin and Sidork have gone in their attempt to journey forward into the Sunless Citadel. in actuality leaving it behind altogether as they've entered the Underdark beneath the surface. What happens next with the Silverkin family after you've restocked your supplies in Oakhurst, and where you go from here is up to you, but this is the conclusion of the Sunless Citadel.
Cool. We nailed that last fight.
Woo!
Anything else?
Nope.
All right.
That was awesome.
Really?
I can't believe I killed him so quickly.
You did all of the hit points required to slay him.
Because you did like 40 attacks on him. Like, well, this reflex and this parry. Oh.
Enemy, raise your glass and sing with the enemy, and I'm not gonna do this on my own. And raise your glass and toast to the enemy, raise your glass and sing to the enemy, and I'm not gonna do this on my own.
This concludes this episode of Tavern Tales, a curated Dungeons & Dragons 5e game set in the Tales of the Yawning Portal adventure module by Wizards of the Coast. Our intro and outro music is the song Tavern Tales by the Bad Billy Band. You can find out more about the Bad Billy Band on iTunes or at www.badbillyband.com, or follow them on Twitter at @badbillyband. Thanks for listening. Please feel free to leave us a review on iTunes or find us on Twitter at @tavern_tales. We'll be back next week with more of the adventure.
Yeah, man, I'm Belak. Belak, oh dude, bro.
I was like, yeah, I kept... The adventure continues to have Belak as like this hoary white guy, H-O-A-R-Y, not like sells himself for sex. Like this white guy.
I picture him as a neck beard.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he definitely has a neck beard. He has a whole bunch of tribal tattoos that are probably inappropriate. Yes, and a man bun. Absolutely. I should have taken more time to better describe Belak, but in my head, when I was creating Belak and trying to figure out his voice, it was always going to be like, "Well, ha ha, you shall be defeated," and be this like
50s prospector,
more like Saruman's nerdy nature brother, you know.
Fair.
And I
Radagast.
Yeah. And I kept not liking that. And I was like, wait, why would he have gotten kicked out of his circle? Well, because he's got crazy, stupid ideas, but also because he's really annoying. Like, and then I was like, what would be really annoying? Well, a nature druid that's all about nature, brah. And I was like, Keanu Reeves and the Big Lebowski who love nature. So that's where
and
that came from.
He's totally a vegan.
I was going to say, this forest is gluten-free.
He's almost on my level.
Yes, exactly.
Whose turn is it?